interest may contain graphic and disturbing subject matter. This is a horror true crime comedy podcast, and the topics may depict murder, abuse, the supernatural, and things that should never be involved with food. Our hosts dive deep into the internet for their research and do their best not to screw up the pronunciations. All jokes are made with the utmost respect to those involved, and listener discretion is advised.
Okay, hello and welcome to another fine and exciting episode of Disturbing Interests. You'll notice that it's me, Lynn, your docent of darkness, doing the intros today because Regina King, your evil queen, is full of sickness and death. Yes, sadly, our Regina is getting over, I don't know, like a month now almost?
2 months.
2 months now. Of horrible pneumonia, horrible cold that turned into horrible pneumonia, which has turned into horrible bronchial coughing spasms. So, in advance, let's just say this is not going to be our smoothest episode. The editing on this is not going to be great, because as we all know, Regina's the mastermind, I'm the idiot comic relief. And so, during this time of Sturm und Drang and bronchial spasms, we're going to limp along. We're going to try not to kill Regina. That's the goal. Although, I did say, you know, if you die, you could come back and you could be we could have the highest rated supernatural podcast on iTunes because we could have you as an actual ghost.
I'm telling you, anything to get listeners, right?
So, I don't know that we're quite there yet, but we're going to do our best to not kill my podner here. Instead, we're going to do this is going to be a gentle, kind of a bit of a bummery episode. So this episode is our version of Ripped from the Headlines TV drama a la Law and Order. Doink, doink. As our starting off point was the tragically bizarre story that was recently all over the internet of Timothy Pitson. And it was from a case that actually happened several years ago, but it kind of came back into the popular consciousness a couple of weeks ago because of some really strange and bizarre new developments in this missing person case.
Sorry, folks.
Yep, see? Proof positive that Regina is slowly dying. We're not going to make this a snuff cast, okay? We're not going to kill her live on air, I promise you.
So, I do have to say about this one, though, we were talking about the case, and every time we would refer to this guy, I kept on trying to call him Pitzel. And later, I was thinking to myself, why am I doing that? Why am I gravitating towards the name Pitzel?
Do you know why? Because you like cookies?
H.H. Holmes.
Oh, yeah, you like H.H. Holmes.
Yeah. Apparently, my brain will take things and link them to H.H. Holmes that have nothing to do with him, or to Belle Gunness, apparently, because my brain goes to old-timey names from her story, too.
Do you have a secret closet in your house that I have not seen that's just, like, a bunch of clippings about H.H. Holmes, Belle Gunness, the Cookie Monster, like, all kinds of things, and there's just all this red yarn linking it, and it's your, like, secret unified theory murder room?
Hey, look, the Cookie Monster is in on all that shit. He is the mastermind, and he has been around for hundreds of years.
But the true power behind that throne, the Count! Have you read, by the way, The Man from the Train?
Yes!
Oh my god, that is a total, like, red string shit taped up on... Wow!
Holy crap! I just finished it week before last... And, oh my god, so I knew about a few of those cases.
Yes.
And I thought that they had to be connected, but my god, that man did some deep digging. And some of those are clearly the same person. Like, the MO is identical. It's fascinating.
And then I don't think we'll ever really know who it is, because it's been so long, you know?
Well, have you gotten to the end of the book?
I have not yet gotten to the end of the book because
wait until the end of the
book. I've been going back and forth and reading that one, and then I've also been preparing for a future episode by reading The Raven Master. So, little sneak preview. Do you like the Tower of London? Do you like horrible history? Because we're going to have an awesome one for you.
If you don't, then you're probably not listening to us.
Right, you should probably be, like, listening to, I don't know, a gardening podcast or something. But yes.
I mean, our gardening podcast would be like how to hide a body and fertilize your lawn.
And speaking of gardenings and possibly hiding a body, so I know Barry is our favorite strange older dude character, but
Barry really is. I adore Barry.
I have my own sort of substitute Barry next door. So my neighbor Yen,
they made more than one.
I think so. Yen is Barry's brother from another mother, and Yen is also an older retired guy about my dad's age. So I'm guessing like 70s, early 70s, and we call him the Yenergizer Bunny because the man, he's retired, but he needs projects. Like when we had the giant snowstorm of death, he's out there shoveling like day in and day out. And I was like, Will, should we go out and like help him? He's like old. And Will's like, nah, it's good for him. He loves this. But yeah, he was out shoveling the whole block. This man cannot stop gardening, cannot stop working. He was out there this morning, and it's a Saturday morning and a lovely spring day, jackhammering, starting at about 10 in the morning, jackhammering with an actual jackhammer, like, because we were like, what the hell? Are they digging up the street? What? It's Saturday. Is there an emergency? No, it's my neighbor. He's jackhammering up his driveway. Now, to be fair, the driveway is it's not a driveway you'd ever want to drive a car down, but he's jackhammering up this concrete driveway, and he might be burying a body, I don't know his life, but that's what he's doing all day, is just jackhammering. And Yen is so into, like, house and garden improvement now that he's retired, that he's taken on my yard as well, and I'm cool with that, I am completely fine with that. As you guys might know from the very earliest episodes, we have a yogi, a summer yogi. We have a backyard hippie.
You have a Jesus in a tent.
We have Jesus in a tent that, like, seasonally lives in a big yurt of very fancy, big, nice tent.
He lives in a tent in their backyard.
In my backyard, as you do. Look, this is normal for Seattle. This is totally normal.
Pacific Northwest, we all have one. If I had a yard, I would probably have a Jesus.
I mean, he's kind of glamping. Like, the interior of it looks it's very fancy. He runs electricity from our house. He uses the bathroom.
He turns water into wine. He's
good. Hey, he turned my scary backyard blackberry death patch into, like, a fancy yard. I got tulips and shit back there now. Like, it's nice. So he's coming back because he's getting back from he overwinters in, like, India and Thailand and does yoga-related things there.
It is Jesus migration time in the Pacific Northwest.
It is, yes. It's like the swallows from Capistrano, Jesus from Goa. He comes
Easter
here.
Easter hits, Jesus comes forth.
Oh my God, he is risen. So anyway, but Yen really likes Blake, our backyard Jesus, because everybody, like, he's just a nice guy. Seriously. If you met him, even if you were, like, an uptight, like, I don't care for that, you'd be, like, moving him into a tent in your backyard. My mom is like, can he come to Pennsylvania? I mean, seriously, like, he's just nice. Some people are just nice. He's nice. My cat loves him. My cat does, like, a dance of joy when she sees him. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so he's just a genuinely lovely person. But Yen decided that the backyard was just not flat enough. I mean, it's pretty flat. No, not flat enough. Like, levels of flat. So he hired a guy from one of the local, day laboring landscape places, which we bankrolled. And he and the dude, while I was at work, basically, I mean, it's perfectly level. It's completely weeded. He's laid down a pad of cardboard with straw. Like, he prepared the way. And I'm like, okay. And I don't, I mean, I think Yen just likes to have a project, and this is his project now.
I think Yen likes himself a backyard Jesus. Oh my God, that squeaking.
Oh yeah.
So Rocky got a new hedgehog today. And you say, what happened to his old hedgehog?
Which murder.
Oh, he skinned that. He skinned it. He skinned it. In fact, it is now called the Naked Hedgehog. Because it's just a ball, but it's a naked hedgehog. So he's such a good boy. He had, we took him in to be neutered. Neutered. It's a boy. Neutered.
A natectomy.
Yes. Yes.
As if on command, he squeaks.
Yep. He had his, jingles removed
And he was de-jangled.
Yeah, he was de-jangled. And so I felt bad for him. He's such a good boy. So I decided, you know what he needs? He needs a new hedgehog because he loves his hedgehog. And he's gotten now with the naked hedgehog where he won't squeak it at all because he knows we're going to take it away. And so now, folks, I'm going to go ahead and go and grab the new hedgehog from Sir Rocky and put it up because we do not need squeaky, squeaky, squeaky all through the cast today. So you hold on 1 second. I cannot tell you how funny this is. He's already ripped the face off.
There was just, like, an eyeball, like a little printed, like, sad, winky eyeball lying on the carpet where he had just gone completely, you know, Hannibal Lecter and eaten the face off this thing.
And now it's on top of the bookshelf, as we have seen happen before, and he is looking at me like, how could you?
Yeah, he's full, like, Romeo balcony scene with Julietting this thing. But at least there won't be squeaky. They'll just be like maybe the odd sad whine.
Yeah, yeah. Alrighty. Well, Lynn, you're getting this kicked off today.
Right, so back to our rip from the headlines story. So we'll start with the story of young Timothy Pittman. Pitson, which is thus.
Not Pitzel.
Timothy Pitson. And Timothy is spelled with two M's, so if you're going to Google the story to get some more information, because this is kind of a quick and dirty explanation of what happened, you'll want to add that in there. Timothy Pitson. So on May 11th, 2011, 6-year-old Timothy was dropped off at his school in Aurora, Illinois, by his father, James Pitson, in the morning, very normally, nothing out of the ordinary there. But just a couple of hours later, his mother, Amy Fry Pitson, picked him up, telling the office that there was some kind of a family emergency that he needed to go attend to, and proceeded to take him on a 3-day road trip to various amusement and water parks around the area. Okay. Sorry, this part is not funny. So Regina has a bottle of, I don't know, looks like Pirelli's Miracle Elixir. No, it's lemonade. And just took a swig and made a face as though she just shot fire water into her lungs. What is in that?
Apparently not anything sweet.
Oh, so it's just like lemon juice and a little water.
That was like lemon to the face. sorry, I just got kicked in the face.
No, I'm just like, I wanted to know if I should administer CPR. You look sort of like you were having an attack.
I feel like I need to keep on drinking it. I opened it, but I'm a little scared. Please continue.
Oh, okay. So,
I'm just going to make faces.
Thank God podcasts are not a visual medium.
I don't know. We may have gotten, like, some comments off of that one.
Oh, man. This is that was pretty intense. So his mother picks him up, takes him on this 3-day road trip to all these amusement parks and water parks, which was documented. They were able to actually, track the movements through these different places. But the problem was that nobody knew this was going to happen. And
so she kidnapped him.
She basically kidnapped her own son. She did call a couple of other family members, including her mother, but not Timothy's father, to tell them that she and Timothy were safe and in no danger. This sadly turned out not to be true. So on May 14th, just 3 days after he was initially taken by his mother, Amy Fry Pitson's body was discovered by a maid in the hotel room that she was staying in at the Rockford Inn in Rockford, Illinois. She had slashed her wrists and neck with a knife after taking a large dose of antihistamines. She left a note apologizing for the mess she had created that explained that Timothy would never be found but was safe with some unidentified people who would care for him. So the knife that Amy Fry Pitson used to end her life only contained her own blood, but in her vehicle, investigators found what they termed, quote, a concerning amount of blood that matched her son Timothy's DNA. Her cell phone was missing, and forensic evidence found on the car indicated that it had been parked in a grassy field, probably near a stream, close to the highway. Her phone was discovered in 2013 near Route 78, but it yielded no further evidence that would help to determine Timothy's whereabouts. The case has since gone cold. Timothy's father believes his son is still alive and has never stopped looking for him. So, a story about this case was filmed and broadcast on the TV series Live PD on August 25th, 2018, where the guest, who is Angeline Hartman of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, showed viewers what an age progression photograph would look like and what they believe Timothy would look like as kind of a young teenager. So he would have been about 13 at that time. Again, this is all really super tragic, a little weird, and all of that sort of thing. But then things took a turn.
So what do you think? Do you think that she killed him and buried his body?
Well, let's find out what happens, and then I'll tell you my theories. So, you know, nobody knows what's happened. Many people suspect that, in fact, he is dead through misadventure or murder on her part. We don't really know. However, earlier this month, just a few weeks ago, on April 3rd, 2019, residents of Newport, Kentucky, several states away, because remember all of this happens in Illinois, called the police to report a teenage boy wandering their neighborhood asking for help and telling them he'd escaped from captivity. When police found and questioned this mysterious young boy, he told them that he was Timothy Pitson. So people all over the internet were, like, riveted by this story. Like, maybe it's him. Maybe he really is alive. Because I think most people kind of assumed, as you did and as I did, that he was killed by her.
But, you know, you always want to hope. You always want
to
hope.
I wanted to believe. I was full Mulder on this one.
But then I'm that person that's also there, like, do you? What did he live through?
Right. So, here's what actually happened. Just one day later, yay for speedy science, the Louisville, Kentucky office of the FBI reported that the young man in custody was not Timothy Pitson. Timothy Pitson, you are not the schoolboy. Not him.
So, what the fuck did he think that they were going to do? Just take his word for it?
Well, who was this mysterious teen masquerader? It turns out, wasn't a teen at all. It was a 23-year-old man named Brian Michael Reaney, who had just been released from jail less than a month before this, and he basically turned up in Kentucky pretending to be this missing boy. He'd been serving time in an Ohio prison on charges of burglary and vandalism and had been in previous trouble with the law. So I don't know if he had had also some mental health issues. Here's my theory on basically what happened with this. My guess is that while he was incarcerated, or shortly after his release, he watched this TV program on Timothy with the age progression photo, and he thought, hey, that could be me. And he decided to see if he could con folks into believing that as well. Now, what that motivation to do it was, God only knows, really. I don't know. I mean, was he looking for a family to take him in? Was he just trying to get notoriety? Was he nuts? I mean, clearly this is not a dude that makes great life choices, you know? So who knows? I mean, to me, it's just fascinating to speculate why people, especially in this day and age, would choose to try to impersonate another person. It's almost impossible, I think, at this point, to truly fake out being someone, given that we have things like DNA testing.
And yet it's getting easier to be a fake someone.
Well, yes. So, you know, I think it's fascinating that by the same token, you have that whole thing with, like, the deep film thing, where they can actually mask, like, when they can take a video of someone else, capture the face, put that face on top of another person's face, and have it look like, you know, Donald Trump saying, I think Barack Obama was definitely an American, and I super like the guy. And it looks like it's really him, you know? Like, so it's just fascinating how easy and hard it now is to fake things. It's really, we live in interesting times.
Boy, that's the truth.
My guess on it is that, and I hope that I'm wrong. I want to be wrong in this case. I think she killed him. I think, you know, there, it was hard to find real information on, that wasn't just speculation on her mental health state, and also, you know, because of things like HIPAA records and so on. We don't really, I don't know, you know, what might have gone on in the family prior to this, if she'd had other issues with mental health. I mean, I have a, my family has someone in it who ended up killing her children thanks to postpartum depression, and that was absolutely terrible. Now, in this case, Timothy's 6 years old, so I don't know that it's that, but, I mean, a lot of...
She could have had a psychotic break. We don't know.
Yeah,
but we don't... It could have been an accident. We don't know. Maybe that's what pushed her to suicide. She... something accidentally happened. He bled out in the car. She was trying to get help. By the time she made it to a said field where the car was parked, he was dead, and she couldn't get to a hospital. Maybe she chose to bury him there. She snaps after her kid dies. Maybe she was kind of teetering on that
clearly something happened well before this murder for her to be like, I'm going to check him out. We're just going to drive around to water parks. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't have enough information that I feel I would trust to make any kind of judgment. And also, here's part of it. Is this my business? You know? It's a
hobby.
To me, this is a really sad, horrible family tragedy. And it's like, I think if we can get any kind of takeaways, anytime it's something like this where a child is abused or murdered, it's somehow worse, you know? Yeah. Because that is absolutely someone that's innocent, that didn't do anything to precipitate what had happened to them. It's potential, I think. And I think it's this atavistic, must protect the young instinct that we have, you know? Mm-hmm. And it has to be that something truly horrible happened to this woman's mental health. Why? We don't know. And if anything we can get out of it, it's that it should be incredibly easy to get help. And it's incredibly not easy to get help. Like we always say, you know, if you're feeling stressed or if you suspect you have mental health issues, go get help. Well, I might as well say go paint your face blue, because it's incredibly hard to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have it. It's very expensive.
It's a lot easier to paint your face blue than it is to get medical help.
It's a lot easier to go buy fentanyl than it is to go and get any kind of real solid mental health counseling help. It really is.
We want to talk about the opioid crisis in America. Well, a lot of those people are self-medicating because they can't get the mental health they need. So maybe if we want to fix that problem, we need to fix the entire system.
You think? Maybe just a little? So yeah, that's my... Well, see, I told you this was going to be the bummer episode. So that's my takeaway. So, as always, me being like, let's make it fun! Let's find the fun! I did actually find sort of a lighter look at people who are imposters, because, you know, we're going to be talking about children and horrible things happening to children, and that just is... That's just awful. It's just a whole basket of awful.
It is, but we have Neko here, and that is delightful.
We have cute cats. So my next two little mini stories are more kind of wacky fun or just weird than they are horribly depressing. And then, of course, Regina's going to bring us home with something truly traumatizing.
Oh, the story I'm bringing us is so amazingly fucked up.
Yeah. So, you know, as is her wont, She'll lower the boom, but I'm here to kind of fluff us up. Oh my god, am I the horror fluffer? I'm the horror fluffer. That's my job right now. Yay me. So there has been such a duplicitous smorgasbord of people throughout history who've impersonated other people for various reasons, usually financial gain, often for espionage. Often it's people who are changing their gender so that they can get to do a thing that they wouldn't be allowed to do, especially women who wanted to do things like soldier or live independently or be in the medical field.
There was a doctor, I want to say, in the early 1800s in Scotland?
Yes.
Who was a woman, and he lived as a man.
Well, and sometimes, you know, for instance, it was just Pulaski, the Revolutionary War era soldier and tactician who was Polish that came and helped in the American Revolution on the side of the revolutionaries, it was recently discovered that perhaps Pulaski was at the very least intersex when they had kind of dug up and moved Pulaski's remains and did some DNA testing on it and found kind of chromosomally some more X chromosomes than they were expecting.
Wow.
Though throughout Pulaski's life, there was never any kind of intimation that it might be someone that was born a woman that was living a life as a man. It's entirely possible that Pulaski was intersex, and we just didn't really know enough about that to notice that or to decide that was what was going on at the time. The Chevalier Déon, who's another interesting character, who was a very androgynous man, who, again, there's a possibility that they were an intersex person. But he went undercover for the French government to infiltrate the court of Catherine the Great in Russia as a woman, because they wouldn't let any men, French men, in the country, but they would let women. So the Chevalier de Déon was such a sort of feminine-featured man that
think about it. Your men cannot come to our country. You French men over there, have heard about you.
It's not like women have any power, so let him in. Come on, it's like letting cats in. I mean, really, right? But anyway, there's a lot of instances throughout history of people impersonating other people because it was a lot easier. You know, you didn't have things like DNA testing, we didn't have the records, we didn't have photographs, and things like that. But here is one of my favorite, just kind of weird and strangely charming stories of impersonation. Charming.
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 Strangely charming.
So this is just a case of some real goofy audacity when it comes to historical imposters. And it is the tale of the very entertainingly named Princess Caribou. Princess Caribou. Carabou, not caribou, like the big moose-looking sucker. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, if you want to skip my blah, blah, blah verbal précis of this story, you could just watch the 1994 entertaining romantic comedy film of the same name, starring Phoebe Cates and Kevin Klein, if you want, Princess Caribou. Okay, then you can check it out afterwards if you want to. So, this story of Princess Caribou is thus. On April 3rd, 1817, a cobbler in Almondsbury, Gloucester, England, found a disoriented young woman wearing strange exotic clothing wandering around in the field near his house, speaking in a language he could not identify or understand. He took her home, and his wife immediately took the stranger to the local magistrate, Samuel Worrell.
As the wife is wont to do.
Yeah, she was like, dude, what are we supposed to do with this? Let's take her to our version of the cops, right? So Samuel Worrell also could not understand a word of what this strange young woman was saying, aside from her identifying herself as being named Caribou. So they sent her to the local inn, because, okay, where apparently she was...
I guess you gotta put her someplace.
I guess, but she was able to identify, and this, I want to know how this all came about, but whatever, a drawing of a pineapple with the word nanas, which apparently means pineapple in the Indonesian dialects. Magistrate Worrell then decided, let's have her jailed for vagrancy, because, hey, social welfare policy was even shittier in the 19th century than it is today, so she was shipped off to Bristol to await trial. Yeah, I don't know, this is all very strange. But wait, it gets weirder. While in prison there, a Portuguese sailor named Manuel Inesso claimed to understand her language, and he translated her story. And I'm going to put translate in big, neon, flaming air quotes. Inesso claims that she said she was Princess Caribou, from the island of Javasu in the Indian Ocean. She had been captured and held hostage by pirates, because, you know, pirates, but escaped to England by jumping off the ship when they were in the Bristol Channel and swimming to shore. Suddenly, in the presence of alleged royalty, Magistrate Worrell decided that Princess Caribou was no mere vagrant and brought her home to stay with him and his wife.
As you do.
Yes. So for the next couple of months, Princess Caribou was basically the main attraction talk of the town. Like, rustic villagers and local dignitaries alike would flock to the home to kind of, you know, observe her and be in her court, right? She gave demonstrations of archery. She fenced with a sword. She swam naked. I see why you're flocking. And prayed to a god named Allah Tala, which is sort of a weird pronunciation of one of the names, the proper names for God in Islam. She wore exotic clothing. I'm not sure where she got it, but okay. And she had her portrait painted for reproduction in local newspapers. She even had her authenticity as an exotic Eastern princess vouchsafed for and verified by a one Dr. Wilkinson, man of science, who identified her language using a popular book about alphabets of the world, and he stated that the strange marks that were found on the back of her head were the work of, quote, Oriental surgeons. She was basically the hot media darling of the moment.
And apparently examined from head to foot.
Well, you know, she was swimming naked, so you got a good look there.
And you have to have a doctor.
Yes.
Seat
for I'm you. Not sure what he was a doctor of, but sure, okay, Dr. Wilkinson.
Asswangery? Could it be asswangery?
He's probably a doctor of asswangery.
Nice.
Well, truth will out, as they say. So, who wants to bet that Princess Caribou truly is from the Isle of Javasu? What are the odds? What odds do you give me on that? Vegas odds, baby.
Let's say 1,000,000 to 1.
You are correct. You have won your bet. Ding, 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 ding. Princess Caribou of Javasu was actually Mary Wilcox, a cobbler's daughter from Devon. She'd been a housemaid and servant girl, but was unable to find work and decided to reinvent herself as an exotic refugee by inventing a fictitious language, using imaginary words and words she'd picked up from gypsies, and I know that's not a great word, but that is what it's listed as, so I'm going to assume tinkers or Roma or, you know, various people wandering the landscape that she might have interacted with. And she came up with kind of this wild backstory based on some kind of sensational novels and newspaper stories that she had seen. So these strange marks on the back of her head from the Oriental surgeon were actually from a botched cupping operation from an indigence hospital in London. So,
what the fuck is a cupping operation?
So, cupping, interestingly enough, is sort of a... it's very popular in acupuncture and Eastern medicine.
Oh, you mean like cupping?
Cupping, like where you use those little sort of suction, glass suction cups. Apparently that was a popular, not really scientific way of curing Christ only knows back in the day in England as well.
Okay, so side note. I have to say, I think the only reason that I'm able to speak at all today, and I have as much energy as I do, is because of my acupuncturist. She is a godsend. If anyone in Seattle is looking for a good acupuncturist, hit up Rebel Med and speak to Fonze. She is the best. The best. And you will not end up with weird cupping scars on the back of your head.
Well, I don't think she's... I'm assuming she's not working out of an indigence hospital in pre-Victorian London.
Well, no. Not unless she's time traveling.
I mean, who knows? It's possible.
I don't know her life. Could be.
But, but apparently this was also a procedure that was done in kind of experimentally in the, I don't know, kind of hospitals of London at the time. And that's why she had funky bumps in the back of her head. So the big reveal of her deception became another huge hot media sensation, and taking pity on their former charge, or more likely just wanting to get her the hell out so they didn't have to deal with it, Mrs. Worrell sent her off to Philadelphia to get away from all of this. So in the U.S., Mary Wilcox attempted to reprise her role as Princess Caribou, but the U.S. was not having it. We were like, dude, no.
Shit, we already had Anastasia. Yeah.
Not yet, not
Bonnie
quite yet.
Princess.
Yeah, like, this is a little before that, but still, yeah. We
We have plenty of scam artists.
Let's just say New Yorkers are a suspicious bunch, and we're like, nah, I don't think so. Yeah. And Philadelphians, oh, believe me, an incredibly suspicious bunch. We were like, nah. So, basically, that did not work. So in 1824, she quietly returned to England, where she again attempted to reprise her role of Princess Caribou, but this time in like a vaudeville-style stage act in London, but that was a huge flop. She once again assumed a new identity, that of Mary Burgess, who was a cousin of hers, and basically moved to Bedminster and pretended to be but a simple widow. She married a fellow there named Richard Baker in 1828, and they had a daughter, who they named Marianne, the following year. In 1839, Mary / Princess Caribou took up the fine and legitimate trade of selling leeches to the Bristol Infirmary Hospital. She died on Christmas Eve in 1864 from a fall. Her daughter, Wikipedia notes, carried on the family leech-gathering business and lived alone in Bedminster in a house full of cats until her death in a fire of February 1900. Hashtag life goals.
To gather leeches and live with cats until you die in a fire?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's the fucking dream, ain't it?
That is a solid plan.
It's where I'm headed.
I like it.
So that's basically my favorite weird imposter story. And now we will move on to the more mysterious folklore side of things when it comes to imposters and children. That would be the concept of the changeling.
Ooh.
So a changeling is a creature from the fairy realms who is put in place of a human child stolen by the fairies. And most of the stories around them tend to come from European folklore, although you'll find similar stories like this of non-human children being swapped out for true, healthy human babes in cultures from around the world.
Fae culture and fae stories absolutely fascinates me.
Well, I would say that, so these sort of instances of wholesome human children being swapped for appalling creatures beyond our ken, they really seem to be a way for people in kind of pre-scientific, pre-modern times to explain things like unexpected illness, death, or developmental disabilities in children and small children and infants. In particular, children with the condition of regressive autism, where at first your infant and your toddler appears to be developing pretty typically and normally for the first few years of their life, and then suddenly they start to show these symptoms of autism, this could be explained by the concept of a changeling. In fact, some of the behaviors ascribed to fairies, such as their compulsion to count things like spilled seeds or grains of rice, might also correlate with the kinds of impulses found in autistic people who take comfort in repetitive behavior like counting. So that kind of gives you a reason why this idea is so prevalent in so many cultures around the world. Now, we've kind of figured out why humans might think this, but as to why otherworldly beings would want to swap their fancy fairy kids for some snot-nosed, you know, naked monkey brat in the first place.
Oh my god, humans are just the best thing ever. Like, every creature wants one of ours.
Well, some beliefs include the idea, especially in Scandinavia, that trolls thought a human upbringing was way more respectable, and that it was sort of like troll finishing school for your baby troll kid. To have them raised by humans.
That's funny.
Oh yes, our son Grognar was raised by only the finest human peasants here in Svarbald. So basically, kind of like that. So they could only swap in most of these cultures for unbaptized babies. So parents of newborns, get your kiddos dunked in the Jesus LaCroix ASAP to protect them from unholy kidnapping, okay? I mean, just, you're only cheating yourself and your baby if you don't do that ASAP.
The Jesus LaCroix.
The Jesus LaCroix.
I just, I can't help it, but yeah. Because LaCroix is bubbly, all I can think of is you dip your baby in and all these bubbles just start coming up. I mean, wouldn't that be a sign of demonism?
Well, okay, so I think of holy water as Jesus LaCroix because, like, LaCroix doesn't actually have any or taste like real fruit juice. It, like, if you're drinking, I don't know, apricot LaCroix, it doesn't taste like there's apricot juice in it. It tastes like the can of water was sat next to an apricot for a period of time. And that's essentially what you're kind of doing with holy water. Actual Jesus isn't in it.
Essence.
He's just kind of near it. Right. Yes. So, yeah. Essence of Jesus.
Because Jesus is actually living in a tent in your backyard.
Right. I guess we could just start dipping Blake. No, let's not dip Blake in any. No. No. We're not keeping his bathwater. That's creepy. Anyway, so
you can live in the backyard, but I need your bath water.
I'm gonna need your precious bodily fluids. I am not. I'm really no. So other theories on why fairies would want these human babies were that fair-haired or light-eyed children were just too damn pretty for fairies to resist. So apparently, fairies are just goddamn racists. They're white supremacists, and they want your Aryan babies. I guess I don't know. So if you see Richard Spencer with some, like, little fairy wings kind of kicking it around the NICU, just kick him in the face. Just punch him anyway.
Yeah.
Wherever you see him, just punch him.
I keep on asking to bring back Throat Punch Thursdays. No one around the office will support this for me.
So basically the idea is that if they had sort of an uggo fairy baby, they'd swap it for a good-looking one. So, you know, better Instagram pics of the babe.
Right.
You see?
Makes perfect sense.
Yes. They remind you of the babe with the power. What power? The power of likes and followers on Instagram. So, yes, there's that. Some Scottish myths.
That would have been a way different movie.
That would have been I don't think you could make that today. Some Scottish myths also suggested that babies born with the caul, C-A-U-L, which is part of the amniotic membrane that was over their faces when they were born, that those babies were from the fairy realm and that they would either die soon after birth or they would have strange powers of foresight. So if you were born with a little chunk of, you know, the internal membrane on you, magic fairy. I don't know. I'm just saying. This was before we had science. This was a thing.
So, fun fact, apparently, as you develop, if the membrane gets stuck over your eyes, it grows in and you can have what's called stars in your eyes.
Whoa.
When you shine a light in there, you have stars. It looks like a galaxy reflect back at you.
Dude.
I have those.
I just have astigmatism, so everything looks like stars at night.
Yeah, I have that too. It sucks.
So, I don't know. I don't think I can see the future. I think I just can't see for shit
in
the present.
For me, it was really weird because optometrists, you know, I have terrible eyes. They'd always look at my eyes and go, whoa, you have stars in your eyes. And finally, one day, somebody explained it to me and took a picture and showed me. I was like, holy
shit. Maybe you're a baby fairy.
Could be.
I have brain sparkles on my MRI. Yeah,
brain
I have tiny
sparkles?
Little. Yeah, I have little scars and little holes in my brain. That explains so many things about me. Apparently, it's not that exciting. My mom has them too, and the theory is that it's because we had a high fevers or viruses or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's for the aliens probed us. I think that's got to be it. That explains so much about everything in my family.
Cat claws.
Could be.
Needing
you
in your sleep.
Oh, yeah. Or in the womb. I was stabbed by a cat in the womb. Instead of frightened by an elephant, just stabbed by a cat. But the other, and the final possibility for why a fairy might want to swap out for a human baby is that fairies are unable to make milk or lactate, so they basically swap their own kids out and had the humans be the wet nurse.
Well, if they're unable to lactate, obviously they don't need to.
Or they should just get, like, some Similac.
Figure.
I don't know. Fairy Similac. I don't know. I'm just saying. This is some of the things that people have come up to theorize why fairies would want a naked monkey baby.
A goat.
I don't make it up. I just report it.
Okay.
Yeah. I just report the news that I find in Wikipedia and in really, really weird places on the internet. Okay. So now here's the part that's actually useful for you parents out there. How to identify a changeling child. How to know if your baby is actually a troll. Well, the Germans, and the Germans are very precise.
If you show your friends and they cringe and pull away, that is the first song.
To be fair, I could have been a troll. I was a weird little pink preemie and I looked like a spider monkey. Yeah,
most kids
do. My Swiss German grandmother's, oh, Zach Fun is very ugly. So, yeah, you know, we're a harsh family. It's a harsh culture. So the Germans felt that the children, the Kinder, with the large heads or the large necks, were suspect when they had to come up with a battery of tests one could perform on this changeling child of the big fat head to diagnose it so you could swap it back for the correct little Dieter. So, how could you do this? One, and this is a thing that shows up across Europe as a way to diagnose. You could confuse the changeling by cooking or brewing in eggshells. Yeah, that confused the shit out of me. Eggshells. Just cooking the eggshell. I don't know. I don't, like I said, I didn't come up with this. I'm just telling you.
What you guys can't hear out in podcast land is my face. I keep on making these faces between drinking this drink and listening to this story. My face is probably classic right now.
Yeah, so again, apparently doing anything involving eggshells just gave fairies the heebie-jeebies, right? So Easter is a difficult time for fairies. It would freak me out, frankly, if someone was like, I'm going to make a little cake here in this eggshell. I'd be like, the fuck? What are you doing? Is this some weird Pinterest thing you saw? Because don't. This just looks like it's going to go to a bad place. So, anyway, that's one way. Eggshell cookery. But you could also, and this was a really easy direct method, just pop the baby in the oven for a bit to see if that caused it to identify itself. Oh, yes, and there were indeed cases of people roasting their goddamn children alive because of this bullshit.
I've heard this, but every time I hear it, I still just... Oh my god, what the fuck?
Hansel
people?
And Gretel.
What the fuck?
Right there, total Hansel and Gretel. If it wasn't a changeling, so if it was a changeling, it would immediately leap up and be like, ow, shit, I'm a changeling! And the fairies would have to come swap, I guess. And if not, roast suckling baby! Delicious! Yeah, I wonder if today you could use an Instant Pot as like a faster method for sussing it out, like, you know?
Well, today we have so many Pinterest recipes with cooking in eggshells that we've got.
Yeah, I'm going to look. I have to look. There's got to be a Facebook cookery group for changeling soup out there. There must be. Another super great way you could identify your changeling kid was hitting or whipping the changeling to get them to confess. Oh, yeah, these are all awesome things you really want to do to a baby. Again, Germany, this whole, like, tough love for the Kinder thing, you're a little scary. You're a little scary. So Ireland was also super duper on board.
Yeah, Ireland has some fucking stories.
Yeah, they were super on board with the whole fairy thing and also super on board with the changeling thing. They were definitely team eggshell. They liked tiny eggshell cookery. And instead of, like, putting your kid in the actual oven for the whole changeling test, they were like, cut to the chase, chuck it on the fire. And if it's a changeling, it'll leap directly up the chimney and return with a human baby. Or again, roast baby. Yeah, in fact, in Ireland, the belief in changelings and not just children, but adults being replaced by fairies held on as long as 1895, when poor Bridget Cleary was straight up murdered by her husband, who claimed he thought she was a changeling.
How dare a woman be independent and have her own means back in that time?
Yes, there's actually, I really like the episode of Lore that goes really in-depth in this, so if that's a podcast you enjoy, check that one out for, like, a full in-depth on this. But the sort of short, what happened to Bridget, is that poor Bridget, her charming hubby, Michael Cleary, decided that, instead of bronchitis making his wife ill, that she'd been swapped by fairies because of Shore. And he basically, along with some other family members who believed in this bullshit, beat and burned her to death in order to force the fairies to return his real wife. Now, happily for justice, Michael Cleary was found guilty of manslaughter, and he spent 15 years in prison.
But he never believed it was her, right?
Didn't no.
Didn't he go to his death thinking
he
that the
fae... He truly believed that he was not guilty of murdering his wife, but that he had killed a fairy. Because, sure, you know, that. That
tell yourself whatever you have to get to right? sleep at night.
So Bridget Cleary has been popularly described as the last witch burned in Ireland, and she is the subject of a darling little Irish nursery rhyme that goes, "Are you a witch, or are you a fairy, or are you the wife of Michael Clary?" Isn't that charming?
Damn her, it still brought him up. Like,
well, yeah.
She doesn't even get her name in the... Man.
Men. Men. So in Poland, go Poland, people believe that the Mamuna, or Boginki, were the spirits responsible for baby swapping, and it didn't really take much care to disguise their little changeling kids. Baby Mamuna were reported to have large abdomens, unusually small or unusually large heads, a hump, vat hump, thin limbs, a hairy body, and long claws. So bears? I don't know.
Same.
They would also grow their teeth in much earlier than a normal human baby would. Because, you know, got to keep up with those claws, you get the fangs. The Poles, being a wily people, had a number of precautions one could take to protect their newborns from abduction. They would tie a red ribbon around the baby's wrist, put a red hat on its head, and keep it out of moonlight. That was very important. No moonlight for your baby. You were also not to wash the nappies after sunset, and never, this is the part that confuses me, turn your head away from the baby as it slept. Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure how you accomplished that one. It kind of sounds like an even crazier version of, like, all the things you're supposed to do as an attachment parent. So even if you were diligent in doing all of these things, the Mamuna were still pretty clever, and if they could manage the swap and leave you with a freaky hairy baby, you could still get your not hairy baby back by taking the changeling over to the local dump, take it to the municipal dump, whip it with a birch stick, and pour water from another fucking eggshell, because yeah, eggshells, over it, all the while shouting, "Take yours, give mine back." The Mamuna would then feel sorry for their own poor little hairy baby who was being eggshell waterboarded and smacked with a stick over by the rubbish tip, and they would return your human baby. And finally, in Scandinavia, there's actually kind of a nice and happy story to end this about how you really probably shouldn't beat the holy living shit out of your creepy changeling baby or bake it in an oven or torment it with freaky eggshell recipes, okay? So, in a Swedish changeling myth, a mother refused to brutalize her little troll baby because she's not a goddamn monster, and she realized this little troll baby is pretty innocent in all of this stuff, too. So her husband, who's a giant dickhole, abandons her for refusing to traumatize this troll infant, and then while he's out wandering the forest, because apparently that's what you do, his own son reappears to him and says, "They've sent me back and released me because of how kind the wife that you've abandoned was to me." So, you know, here's the thing. Maybe if you suspect your child is a changeling, don't hit it, don't take it to a garbage bin. For the love of God, keep the eggshells out of this whole thing. Take the child, take its weird, hairy-bodied, big-headed self to the goddamn doctor instead of shoving it in the oven. Or, you know, the Instant Pot. And that is the story of changelings. So awesome. Now you have an actual changeling-type, real-life, ripped-from-the-headlines horrible story that you can tell us.
I do, but hold on one second. Sorry about that, folks. I was coughing myself to death. So this episode is going to be a little bit longer because I'm not doing much editing today, just because, like we said, I'm dying over here. So anyhow, here I go. My story is on one of my favorite weird stories out there, which is the story of the disappearance of Bobby Dunbar.
Yeah, so I know a little bit about this one, and it's weird because it's not the only story like this from approximately the same time period.
It's really not. So Oh, let me just adjust my throat here in the mic. Awesome.
I think we should call this episode Disturbing Interests Unplugged.
Huh. That may be the title. So, the thing about the turn of the century, 1900 era, let me set the scene for you. So, like I said, before I go into deep into the story, I need to set the scene of the old-timey South in the Americas.
That sounds like a fun place.
Right?
I bet it'd be great to be a person of color or a woman or a poor person there.
Oh,
I bet it was or a Native American. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, I bet it was just a great time. It was a good time to be alive.
Yeah, good times for all. It was a very racist time.
You might argue that it still is kind of all over America, but it was like, you could be gleefully and openly racist.
Oh, yeah. Like, they published shit in the newspaper that was like, this black man of very poor color or very poor character was dirty and filthy and all of this, just like his race is known to be. And, I mean, I've heard and read some of these old-timey articles that just fucking gobsmacked me because they are so racist.
Oh, yeah. Jim Crow had his wings beautifully spread. Yes, he sure did.
Yep. It was also a time filled with yellow journalism. So at the turn of the century, not a lot of people were literate. And then within like 10, 12 years between 1900 and 1912, that jumped up a considerable amount. And they found a good business in the newspaper industry. Yellow journalism, as we know, is just straight out fucking lies.
And are you saying it's fake news?
Ha! Yes. Yes, I am.
Like National Enquirer style?
Worse.
Wow. Worse. Giving Fox News a run for its money.
Justice and her departments were shooting free and easy. Police departments didn't even know how to properly investigate murders and would collect rewards to hire often sketchy private eye companies. These private investigators would often decide who was guilty and then fabricate the evidence and it would appear, and the PIs would collect their reward. So, you know, good times. And justice moved fast. Like, you were arrested for murder.
At the speed of lynching?
Yes. Yes.
Ugh.
In 1912, when the main event of our story occurred, women still had 8 years before they were given the vote. Because, you know, their thoughts and opinions did not matter. They could not be trusted, and they were not considered valid in the eyes of the law.
And let's also stress that that was white women weren't given the vote. Right. Women of color didn't get to vote until substantially later. So, yeah. just a great time to be alive.
Yeah. Fingerprints were a new technology and rarely used at this time. There was no way to prove, without a shadow of a doubt, that you were genetically related to somebody during that time. We take DNA for granted. I'm gonna die doing this. This is going to become the snuff cast.
Oh dear.
The Titanic sinking was the biggest story of the year, with the exception of the 3 days that this tale knocked it off the front of the papers. And infant deaths at this time were one in every 67 children.
Yep. This is it. And again, let me just throw something out there. Just get your kids vaccinated.
Yeah.
Only the ones you want to keep. The only ones you like.
So, now that we have all that backstory, we can begin our tale. In 1908, in Opelousas, Louisiana, Percy and Leslie Dunbar had their first baby boy by the name of Bobby.
This is going to go great for Bobby.
Oh, for sure. Later, Percy and Leslie had Percy and Leslie, that is going to trip me up.
I love that name, Percy and Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
If I got a pair of lovebirds, I would name them Percy and Leslie.
I just want a pair of, like, maybe a clothing company, the Percy and Leslie,
Percy and Leslie
brand.
Percy and Leslie children's onesies.
Let's keep them away from children. Anyway, they had another son named Alonzo as well. Keep Alonzo in the back of your mind. He pops up here and there in the story, but, you know, just keep him in the back of the mind right there. On A warm August day, the 23rd day of August to be exact, in 1912, the Dunbars decided to take a day trip and spend their time fishing at a family cabin on Swayze Lake.
Patrick Swayze Lake?
Little before his time. Okay. It was his grandpa, Chuck Swayze.
Chuck Swayze, okay.
But yeah, the Dunbars were pretty well off. I mean, obviously they had their own cabin on a lake. They're going on a fishing trip. Anyhow, so a family friend by the name of Paul Mizzi, I'm loving the names in this story, Paul Mizzi, took all of the kids down to the lake to shoot at gar.
Gar sure, being large fish. Yeah.
Yes.
Alligator gar.
Yep. Alligator gar. He, as they were coming back, so he was very close to Bobby. They were joking around and stuff. He picked Alonzo up on his shoulder, was herding all the rest of the kids back to the cabin for this fish fry. And along the way, he lost track of Bobby. He didn't realize it until he got to the cabin, but they couldn't find him.
And about how old would Bobby be around this time?
He was four.
Four. Okay.
4 years old. He had a nickname for him. His nickname was Heavy.
Heady?
Heavy.
Heavy.
Because he was a stout little guy.
Beefy little dude.
Yep. P.S. If anyone ever nicknames me Heavy, Throat Punch Thursdays will be back in session. No one really knows how long it was before they realized Bobby was missing. However, when they got back to the cabin, it was immediate. They just don't know how long it was from walking there to when he went missing. They gathered up a huge search party. I'm talking 500 people. They were out there at this lake dynamiting it.
Because that's a great way to find kids.
Well, they thought that, so they found his tracks and followed him down to the water's edge, over by this train track.
Oh, so possibly they thought he had fallen in and was no more.
Or was taken by an alligator.
A gator.
Because, fun fact, Louisiana has the largest population of gators in the United
States. Oh, yeah, just a couple, three. Now, I'm horrified, because I, as a kid, grew up in Huntsville, Alabama. That's northern Alabama, for those of you that aren't intimately familiar with the geography of the world's stupidest state, next to West Virginia. West Virginia exists solely so that people like Mississippi and Alabama can feel a little good about themselves. Florida can feel very good about itself. All of our southern listeners are going to be like, fuck you, but there you are. But, like, we didn't have, when I was a kid, alligators, but thanks to global warming, shit, they're in Huntsville now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for us to find one here at Green Lake in Seattle. It's happening.
Before my dad passed, he took, and this is a while ago, we're talking over a decade ago, he took a boat out on the Arkansas River and saw a gator out there.
What the hell?
Right? I mean, for those of you who do not know, it snows heavy in the parts of Arkansas that we were from. And we were in the Ozarks, and it snows heavy there in the winter. But sure enough, he saw a gator, and he came home and he told me, I was like, you're lying. But my dad wasn't a liar.
Nope, they're coming. The gators are coming. And the stink bugs. The stink bugs are brown, marmorated stink bugs.
Love bugs is what you need to worry about.
The stink bugs are pretty horrible. I just want fireflies to be able to, like, fly over the Rocky Mountains, because I'd like to have those.
Yeah, I do miss the fireflies.
And I don't want palmetto bugs of any kind ever. Or cave crickets. Ugh, no.
No.
No, I like living in a fairly low bug sort of part of the world.
Yes.
Sorry, but continue about giant alligators, or it could have been palmetto bugs that got them.
What I love is that this isn't being edited out, because I'm not editing today.
Because you're like, hey, palmetto bugs, enjoy. This is the medical, and you know, I just about at edit, like, you don't, I'm going to learn better. I'm going to get better at editing, I swear to God, and jump in.
It's okay.
Oh God, my job is currently trying to kill me. This is okay. The first actual weekend I have had off where I haven't been transporting animals to Oregon or, you know, doing the Lord's work or working at a show in, I don't know, almost a month. So, yeah, we are going to make it through this year if it kills us.
So back to Bobby.
Bobby, yes. Bobby and the alligators.
So they don't know if... So at this point, they start hyperbolizing. Okay, maybe... I was hypothesizing. Maybe he was taken by a tramp, since it was right there next to the train tracks.
Okay.
They start walking the train tracks. They're finding guys. They're still looking for Bobby. They drag the lake with fish hooks, thinking that maybe he fell in and drowned. Now, there was the straw hat involved.
Like that Bobby was wearing?
Yes, he was wearing a straw hat. And so they figured if an alligator got him or if he drowned, that straw hat would have fallen into the water and floated away. And so they were going to see how long it floated and where, and that would give them an idea of how far out he might be in that lake. And it floated for like, they got another hat, threw it in there, and it floated for like an hour and something. And so they were like, clearly he didn't drown or was taken by an alligator because the hat isn't there. There are no remnants of his clothing or his hat. Seriously, this was a thing that happened. What the fuck? But like I said, the Dunbars were also very well off. And so they thought, well, somebody clearly kidnapped this child to hold him for ransom. They did it intentionally aiming at this family who still in Opelousas, this family has names on signs. They're very well-known, prominent people. And in fun fact, in the South, who your daddy is matters to this day. Like,
well, heck, in these days it surely does, because that's how y'all make your money is family stuff nowadays. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it was very much, in fact, I have had somebody ask me down South, who's your daddy?
And not a, who's your daddy? No. Well, okay.
No. Yeah. It was... Well, hi there. Nice to meet you. So who's your daddy? Who's your mama? Who's your daddy? Who's your people? Like, that
oh,
is...
Oh, no. I'm familiar with the who's your people. Yep.
Who's your people? Yep.
That I'm just going to start replying, the gays. The gays are my people.
Our Lord and Savior. I am the second coming. Okay. So, like I said, grief does weird things. Or maybe I haven't said that yet. But grief does weird things.
It surely do.
And after, you know, they had decided to dynamite the lake trying to shake a body up, and they had killed alligators and cut open their stomachs trying to find remnants of this little boy. Nothing. So they began believing he was kidnapped. And so when the when the newspapers came in to play on all this, what they were reporting was that this young boy had been kidnapped. And
because that makes a much better story than boy possibly eaten by tramp alligators with a penchant for straw hats.
Exactly. The family raised a reward and took the stories to the papers. Like I said, they went to the papers in New Orleans, and the papers picked it up from all the way from Florida to here in Seattle.
Well, I mean, it's a juicy story, isn't it?
It is. And this is during, mind you, right in the middle of the Titanic crash. Crash? Sinking.
I mean, kind of a crash. It did crash into a big-ass iceberg, so sure. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, tragedy.
Tragedy. Many people dead versus one little boy possibly kidnapped. But, I mean, Nancy Grace would have been losing her shit after this. Like, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, today we go bananas for things like this.
Yeah. Well, it was so compelling that, of course, people were paying attention. There was a large reward attached to it. $1,000 to anyone who could lead to the return of the little Bobby. Now, in today's money, that equals $22,000. He's got his naked hedgehog.
I'm being attacked by a dog
with the naked with hedgehog.
Snorted. See, this is the whole unplugged thing. This is our sound effects that we've got going on here. Mm-hmm. This is how you can tell this is a real artisanal podcast right here.
You have dog snorts and a
dog
naked
snorts,
hedgehog.
Squeaky toys.
Yeah. Notice he's not squeaking that.
Terrible jokes.
Yes.
Terrible jokes at the expense of kidnapped or alligator murdered children, because we're just that classy.
Bugs.
And coughing. And lemonade.
Mr. Meow walking in the background. Yeah, yeah. All things that are normally edited out. See, people? This is why you don't want uncut. You think you want uncut. You don't want uncut.
This is like the baseline. This is going to make you really appreciate the next episode where we're hopefully, theoretically, back on our game. Or where Regina astrally projects from the netherworld because she's dead.
Yep. In addition to the newspapers, he also, the father, Percy, printed off flyers with the picture, his picture on it, like hundreds, and handed them out. Now, that was a really expensive thing to do back then.
Yeah, it did not have Kinko's down at the turn of the century.
No. So, I mean, if you think about that, he was serious about finding his son. As well as the flyers, he sent out notices of this missing boy, this kidnapped boy, Bobby Dunbar, to every police station from Florida to East Texas. That's a lot.
And it wasn't like you could just email this kind of stuff or, you know, go out in the wire. This would be a real effort.
Yeah, he put some effort into
this. Wouldn't be the kind of thing that a family that was poor or of color could do at the time.
So let's keep the Dunbars in our mind, but travel a little bit further back in time to 1911 and look at another family in North Carolina who are going to come into play here. Julia Anderson was an unmarried single mother, which in 1912 meant she was a fallen woman.
A trollop!
Trollop.
With a bastard child!
Three.
Three bastard children! Yes.
The standards of the time were rough, especially for women or people of color, as we were saying. She had given birth to three children, like I said. One had been given up to adoption. One had died, and she had been wrongfully accused of killing the baby. And then there was her little boy, Charles Bruce Anderson, who she had with a married man. And no one ever really knew who his father was, but they knew who his father was.
Gotcha.
They called him Bruce. And the rumors were that he was the son of one of the Walters boys. And that was the family that Julia worked for. So Bruce had gone with the man, believed to be his uncle, William Cantwell Walters, for 2 days to visit relatives to help his mother care for him. So she's trying to get back on her feet. She's just been accused of murdering her other child. She has one that had to be given up to adoption. And she's just trying to provide for her son and get enough on her feet. So his uncle offers to take him with him to go and visit relatives for a couple of days. Then he's going to bring him back. He was supposed to have been gone for 2 days. 2 days.
Okay, that all seems legit.
It was 15 months before Julia saw Walters again.
Okay.
You see, Walters was a traveling handyman who would tune people's pianos and organs for a living. And he was doing this in a very, like, scammy time because, you know, everybody was out to milk local yokels in the Americas. I mean, hell, we're still a very scammy place. And he found that having little Bruce with him made people more receptive to giving him a place to stay.
Oh, he's using the kid sort of as a prop, like, yes. Won't you take me and little Bruce in?
So 8 months after Bobby went missing, authorities in a small town near Poplarville, Mississippi, apprehended Walters and the young boy traveling with him. Because he was clearly the kidnapper of little Bobby Dunbar.
Ah, isn't that convenient?
Right? So, the interesting thing is Walters had been apprehended once before in Missouri for the same thing. And they let him go because they realized it wasn't Bobby. So, picked up in Missouri once, let go. Went to Mississippi because, you know, apparently if you're traveling with a kid who looks like a kidnapped child in this time and they're kidnapped from the South, going deeper south is a good idea.
Right? Going to Mississippi is almost never a good idea. Now, again, we've lost all of our Mississippi viewership, but yeah,
Look, Mississippi, this is the turn of the century. You are a very different place. We all know. Look, I live down there. I live down South Louisiana. You know I love you. But we know. You don't blame me for this. We know. I just call them as I see them. So how did they know it was little Bobby when they apprehended Walters. Well, by his description, of course. Makes perfect sense. They got a description. It could fit only one child the Americas.
Is this the basically the Mrs. Swan, he look like a man, but for a child?
Kind of.
Okay.
So the description was, he was an average-sized, blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy with one scarred toe from a burn as an infant.
Okay. Did they even check the toe, or were they like, nah, seems fine?
Oh, wait. They couldn't because he was too filthy. It gets worse. So,
should we have just trigger warning child abuse this one? Or is it just taken as a given that this show is going to be all about things like that?
Well, I do have a warning.
That is true, we do.
The show, yeah. So.
Extra trigger warning, super horrible to kids.
Yeah, you people know, you've been warned. I warned you. So, look, at this point, I'm not really questioning the Dunbar's parenting skills because this is horrible. They've had their child either eaten or taken.
Grief makes you do the wacky.
But I might raise an eyebrow because what the fuck happened to that infant's toe? Like, how do you get it burned that bad and what was it on?
Well, I mean, think about the fact that we didn't really have, I don't know how much electricity they had, if there were a lot of things like, you know, radiators or kerosene lamps or things like that.
Don't you think you would, like, put up a fence to keep the baby away from the radiator if you were a wealthy
I'm not excusing, but I'm also saying little kids want to die. I mean, just seriously, if you've ever had to watch one, they are looking for any way to kill themselves or maim themselves horribly because they're dumb. They don't know yet.
That is very true. Wow. That drink is so tart, it stopped me from being able to respond.
Is it helping with the cough, at least?
Yes,
it is. Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
that's why I'm drinking it. Listeners, Regina is putting herself through lemonade hell just to get through this episode for you.
It's a special kind of lemonade hell. I mean, it's a special kind of lemonade, and it's hell, but yes.
It even has, honest to God, on the front of it, there is a tiny red hand, like, holding up as if to say, hey, stop, and it literally says, not for kids on it.
Yes, it's not.
What?
It is not for children. It is not. It is.
It's contraindicated for humans to drink.
A special kind of lemonade. Anyway, so as I was saying, from lemonade hell to the Dunbars. So this kid's feet were too filthy to quickly identify him. Why they didn't give him a bath? I don't know, because baths definitely feature in this story. But the Dunbars were contacted at this point for additional photos to identify this boy. So, okay, you contact a family that's like a state over, and they go, oh, well, we'll just come and visit then, right?
Because these are pretty desperate people.
Their son's been missing for 8 months. They're super desperate. So, the Dunbars traveled to Mississippi in person, as you do. The boy had a scar on his toe, it was a scar, and a mole on his neck in the same places, but he refused to answer to the name of Bobby. So this is where I'm forced to question the Dunbars' parenting, seriously. Who the fuck would not recognize their child after missing that kid for only 8 months?
I suspect this is just grief, madness, societal pressure, just folie à deux kind of situation happening. You're just so desperate. Like, you know your kid is dead. Like, you're in your heart of hearts, you know an alligator got him, he drowned, palmetto bugs, really hungry frogs. Swamps are a scary place,
they
right?
They are.
They are a place that wants you to die. Nutria. Perhaps he was taken away by Nutria.
Think they were introduced until the 30s.
Okay.
So well, he was proto-nutria.
Proto-nutria came and got him. Who knows? And they kind of know that, but hope, oh boy, hope is like in there. Like you want so desperately for your boy, you want to take it back, you want it to not happen, that any kind of lifeline that gets thrown to you, you're like, yeah, sure, I'll totally believe that.
However, on the flip side, there was that case of the boy in the Wineville chicken coop murders
that
the movie The Changeling was based off of. And that woman was like, this is not my kid. Yes. To the point where she got put in a mental institution until it was found out, because a woman doesn't know her own child.
Oh, yeah. If you really want to be super depressed after this, if you're like, this wasn't awful enough, give me more, may I suggest checking out the movie Changeling, with the lovely Angelina Jolie as the mother who said, not my kid, and ended up in the booby hatch. Like, that'll make you feel great. It's an uplifting story.
And if you want to just feel terrible about humanity as a whole, look more into the Wineville chicken coop murders.
Maybe don't, because it's real bad.
It's bad.
It's hella bad. Yeah, it's...
I probably won't ever do the Wineville chicken
coop murders. No, I have no entire... No. I thought about actually doing the story of Changeling so we could have two of these, and I was like, we fucking can't. Mm-hmm. That's just a bad trip for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a rough go. Anyway, so Lessie, when she tried to hold the little boy, he would not respond to her, and she herself could not say if it was him. The next day, she came back and gave him a bath. Because apparently that was a thing you could do. Some random child, I'm just going to fucking bathe him, back in 1912.
Yeah, I don't think we had laws and stuff about child welfare back in the day.
No, definitely not. And while she gave him a bath, she shouted out, thank God, it's my boy, and then fainted. I have no idea. I have seen both pictures of the boy that they found and the boy that went missing. And you, as an artist who has to look at faces, I guarantee you would see a difference.
I mean, yeah, you can say, yeah, well, little kids all kind of look alike. But yeah, no, you could tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there were multiple stories in the paper, and they were contradicting. Some of the stories said that they spoke to Lessie and Percy before they had positively identified him, and they said that his eyes were too small, that they didn't think it was their boy. Other stories had the first accounting of him meeting this family, not knowing them. And then there's this story out there that said when they were reintroduced, he went running into his parents' arms and called out to them. And then he ran into his little brother, Alonzo, who was there, and touched his face and called out his name, Alonzo.
Yeah, cool story, bro, but no.
Right, yeah. So they took him home. The Dunbars took little Bobby home. And Walters, of course, was fucked, because he had told multiple stories at this point, slightly different, but all pretty much the same, that the boy had been given to him. And finally, he just told the straight story that they thought he was the boy's uncle. Me's tripping over my words. See, people, this is what we edit out. That the mother, Julia Anderson, lived in North Carolina and was the mistress of his brother, and that was their child. He had taken them with permission on this road trip. Please, please, please call Julia, or summon
wire.
Julia.
Yeah, yes.
Something. Send a fucking homing pigeon over to Mrs. Anderson. They reached out and contacted Mrs. Anderson, Julia, and she said, yes, he has my boy, but he was only supposed to have him for 2 days. Now, in Louisiana, one of the reasons Walters was so desperate, he was tried in Louisiana because he was kidnapped in Louisiana. But one of the reasons he was so desperate was because it was a capital punishment for kidnapping.
Aha, so his life was on the line.
Yes, it was. So, my point, though, is he's still a fucking kidnapper.
Oh, yeah, he kidnapped the kid, absolutely 100%.
Mm-hmm. However, Miss Anderson was a fallen woman and didn't have the kind of pull that the Dunbars did. So, apparently nobody cares that this poor woman had her child kidnapped, too.
Hey, as long as the rich people are happy, we're good to go.
I mean,
the kid's going to have a better life with them. You know, that's all the kind of... And here's a part. Possibly he would, but at the same time, this is really duplicitous. And money doesn't necessarily mean a more loving environment, as we will find out.
As we will. So the Dunbars, like I said, they took Bobby home, and in that first couple of days, the town was so thrilled, they threw a parade. So he got to ride on a fire engine with all these flowers being thrown at him and everybody cheering that he had returned home. And they gave him a pony and a bike. I mean, this is a kid who came from practically starving on the edge of poverty. And when they picked Walters up, the reason he was caught and held on suspicion with this boy is because a couple of women had witnessed him beating the boy.
Oh, this poor kid has to be so confused right now.
And at this point, he's only a 4 or 5.
He's like 5 at this point, right?
Yeah. So he's lived the majority of, well, not majority, but a good portion of his formative years at this point away from his mother. So what are you going to do? Go to the people who are so happy to have you back and love you? And
they gave you a pony? I mean.
Pony. Parade. Right? A town so happy to have you there, they throw you a parade.
Look, I would probably be like, I'm your kid if you gave me a pony now. Yeah.
I mean, apparently ponies or a mini goat. Are just the way to
a
your
corgi.
Heart. Oh, corgi, I would be in. See, otter.
Super easy to buy my love. Yeah, and your
buy
love.
My
yeah.
love. I will be your child for an otter.
Yeah, I feel bad for almost everybody involved in this thing except Walters, the actual asshole creep bag kidnapper.
Well, Walters ended up sending a letter to the Dunbars begging them to send for Julia Anderson, and he is quoted as saying, I know by now you have decided you are wrong. Page turning. Things normally edited out.
This is how the sausage is made, people.
We are a sausage, aren't we? I know you know. Blah, blah, blah. Words. I know by now you have decided you are wrong. It is very likely I will lose my life on account of that. But he's still a fucking kidnapper. Like,
yeah.
Let's keep this in perspective. Everybody, even in all of the things I've heard, the documentary that was done about this, everything, everyone seems to think that if he had taken him from Anderson, he'd be fine because she gave him permission to take him
for two days. Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. Possession is not 9/10 of the law for people.
Right?
Or at least it shouldn't be, but it seems to be in this case. And I'm not saying I think this guy should be put to death. I'm not a big capital punishment fan in general, but this guy should do some damn time. This guy should have to do some kind of restitution for basically being a shitbag who kidnaps a kid and then is kind of shitty and abusive to him.
Right?
I mean, come on.
So eventually a newspaper in New Orleans brings in Julia Anderson because they want the story. I don't know.
Not because they're into justice, but no. Boy, what a juicy scoop.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the Times-Picayune, but I really want it to be because that was my favorite paper when I lived down there. Anyway, going to Opelousas did not go well for poor Julia. I mean, she was tarnished in the papers. She was a fallen woman in 1912. They published all about her kids being taken away, her being accused of murdering the baby, and her having her other child taken away by this man. So when she goes to identify her son, Bruce, she's forced to identify him out of a lineup. They bring all these boys who look similar, traipse them out in front of her, and they're like, pick out your kid. Now, at this point, it's been 15 months since she has seen her son. And that time period, I can understand a little bit more because from 3 to 4,
you change so much. Yeah.
The face can change. So she finds him, and she's asking them, is this him? Is this him? And they won't answer her. They won't give her any yes or no either way. And so she chooses not to identify any of them and asks to go back the next day and give him a bath. Because apparently that is just what people fucking do.
The cleansing power of water is how you come to know others, I guess.
Right. So she identifies him. But at this point, the papers just have a field day with her not being able to identify her son. And although they did not do that with Lessie.
Well, I mean, Lessie wasn't a a white trash trollop now, was she?
Oh, get this. This is a direct quote from one of the papers. What the writer said was, "Animals don't forget, but this big coarse country woman had." What the fuck, guys? I mean, she's still missing her kid. Like, that's fucked up.
Honestly, today, if this kind of story had come up in the media, you'd probably find pundits and, you know, commentators and certainly assholes on Twitter saying the same kind of things. We love to judge. We really love to judge.
People are cruel, especially when they can hide behind the written word.
And when they can hide behind moral righteousness, right?
Oh, yeah, that too. So, she had no way to fight for Bruce in Opelousas. She had no money, and she definitely didn't have the resources that the Dunbars did. They had the entire town behind them. They had lawyers. They had wealth. And so, completely defeated, she left town. And she went to Poplarville, Missouri, where they had found him. In Poplarville, they took her in. They adopted her as one of their own. And she and 20 other people from Poplarville, Poplarville, where they picked up Walters, ended up testifying on behalf of Walters that this actually was Bruce Anderson. They had seen him in the area before Bruce had been gone.
Oh,
Bobby had gone missing. Excuse me. So, yeah, 20 people.
But, you know, there's them's from Poplarville, and y'all know what Poplarville's like, so we can just disregard all of them, right?
Right, because he ended up being found guilty. Which, he still was a kidnapper.
He is guilty, but he's not guilty. He's like, guilty, not guilty. Like, And regardless, should he be put to death? No, he should not be put to death.
Yeah.
Definitely a little time, a little crime. He did the crime, let's have some punishment. But, like, don't kill the dude.
I don't know. What did he do to the boy? We don't really know.
We don't know, right.
So, I have to put a caveat here. Every time Julia Anderson told her story, she always put in there that she only gave him permission to take him for two days.
Yep.
And it was a sad outcry for, you know, this poor woman. So,
desperate people, given terrible choices, do the best that they can.
Right.
And that's what happened here.
Yep. So Walters ended up appealing and being granted a retrial after a couple of years. But the town decided, nah, it's too expensive, you're free.
Oh, well, that's great.
Right. So after 2 years in prison, he went free. So I think that, you know, as long as he didn't horribly, horribly abuse that boy, yeah, it's kind of fair. He spent 2 years in prison. At least he paid for it.
And from a recidivism standpoint, I don't think he's going to be doing this sort of shit again.
Nope. So Julia Anderson went off and had remarried. She had a family, and they all heard growing up how a wealthy family in Opelousas had kidnapped their brother, and she ended up dying in Poplarville, Mississippi,
without ever seeing her son again. Oh yeah. Man!
And so the Dunbars, however, raised their kids. They ended up getting divorced. They had a rather tumultuous life. The father was tried, and I think he might have even gone to jail for some mischief and hijinks of his own. And he had a very, very public scandal with an affair, and that's what caused the divorce. It was big. They kind of got dragged through the mud just by their own petard, so to say. But anyone who has experienced the loss of a child can tell you it is almost impossible to keep a relationship together during that time period. So if they knew, which later a letter was found from Julia Lessie, that had some subtext that she knew.
They had to know.
They had to.
Yeah.
So Bobby ended up becoming very estranged from the Dunbars as he grew up.
Which doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. But he found a nice woman, got married, and had four kids of his own. And then he died in the 1960s. And this is where you think that, you know, our story would end. Oh, except for Walters, who kept on tuning pianos, so, you know.
Well, at least he found that calling.
Right. And this is where you would think it would end. However, those people had families. And Bobby Dunbar's granddaughter, Margaret, she's very... This entire story is known for being a documentary done by This American Life. Definitely worth watching. It's far better than this telling is. I'll tell you that because I know I'm hacking, and we're talking about bugs, so whatever.
Yeah, theirs may be the actually well-produced, well-researched, actually, like, NPR version. Ours is like, the gritty DIY version.
Yeah.
You know? There you go. That's what it is. It's the punk rock version of learning things.
We're
punk rock NPR for y'all.
That's how I like to live my life right there. Punk rock NPR. So, Margaret got this box/book of old newspaper photos given to her by her father, I think, when she was trying to cope with loss. And she started going through them, and she was really disturbed by how many discrepancies in the reporting there were, including a quote from Leslie and Percy, the one that I said, that said the boy didn't look like them. His eyes were too small. They didn't think that it was their son. And even more upsetting, she was discovering articles where Julia Anderson said that her son had been kidnapped by the Dunbars. So this was very traumatic for her. She also found a drawing, though, that was pretty funny, that was of an old Bobby with his grandson sitting in his lap, and they're looking at an old newspaper. And it says something like, do you think we'll ever know what our right last name is, Grandpa? Right?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and enter science.
Enter science. Because this was done, like, this was back in the 90s. So DNA was just beginning to become known. So she reached out to the Andersons, though. And she heard their side of the story. She heard about how they had grown up hearing that they had a relative who had been kidnapped by a wealthy family in Opelousas. But she still believed she was a Dunbar. So it was almost a note of contention between them over what she believed. And finally, oh, another thing though, real quick. Her grandfather, so Bobby's brother and sister, both had stories.
Alonso!
No.
These actual the biological,
Andersons.
Okay.
Excuse me, the Andersons. So they had stories of him coming into their places of work and having conversations with them at a certain point in his life.
Oh, so he kind of knew and was curious and, yeah.
He had questions, obviously. So, they eventually did DNA. She got her father to give her DNA and check it against his brother. Not brother. Cousin. His cousin. So, Alonzo's kid.
Alonzo's kids.
Okay. Yeah.
Alonzo is important in all of this.
Mm-hmm. She didn't ask the entire family, though, if, you know, her brother, her uncles and siblings and all that. And they got
kind of keep it a little bit quiet, yeah.
Well, they got pissed when they found out that she had done this. They had said that it was ancient history, it shouldn't matter.
Leave the skeletons buried where they are.
Pretty much.
Yep.
And it caused a pretty dumb and pretty big rift between them. But that was because the DNA turned up that they were not Dunbars.
Nope. Surprising no one.
Oh, yeah.
That has now heard the story.
Yep.
Hey, but remember, denial, not just a river in Egypt, right?
That's right. So they didn't do DNA testing against the Andersons, even though what would be Bobby's brother on that side had offered to give DNA to check before he died, that was. And so they didn't do the DNA testing, though. They decided to let sleeping dogs lie. There was a big enough fight in the family. who knows if, I mean, really, this is probably, not Bobby Dunbar, Bruce Anderson, but he was raised as Bobby Dunbar, so he became Bobby Dunbar. And that was his thought behind all of it, is he was a Dunbar, no matter what. So, no one really knows what happened to Bobby. When the Lindbergh kidnapping happened, a local paper went and interviewed Bruce, and they asked him if he remembered anything. Well, I say Bruce, Bobby.
Bobby.
And they asked him if he remembered anything from being on the road with Walters. At this point, it was a few years after. And he said, he told this very bizarre story that he remembered both him and Bruce Anderson being on this wagon, and that Bruce had fallen and hit his head and died, and he had lived on. And so it was like he was explaining the death of Bruce Anderson, and he reemerged as Bobby. But because he put that story out there, now there's this mysterious, like, belief that maybe Walters kidnapped them both, which is...
Yeah, it seems unlikely to me.
I don't think so either. Personally, I think that that little boy was Bruce Anderson, and he was taken by the Dunbars out of just sheer desperation, wanting it to be little Bobby.
And that little Bobby drowned or in fact, was eaten by an alligator.
Most likely eaten by an alligator. I mean,
that's what alligators do.
Yeah.
Although their favorite food is marshmallows.
What?
Yeah! So, like, if you do any of the swamp tours, I know, we're just talking about dead kids, now we're moving on to marshmallows and alligators! But seriously, so they'll use chicken and other things to get the gators to come to the boats, to the, you know...
Yeah.
But, more effective even than that, are marshmallows. Apparently, they just love marshmallows, and they float. And they call it sugaring. Are you sugaring? They'll throw out the marshmallows, and the gators will come in to get the marshmallows, and you can lure them right up to the boat.
So, living in the South as long as I did, we found gators were a problem, because I would have to go out to the family property in the swamp and stuff, too. But, like, they had closed down more than one roadway with me trying to get to work than once. And that's a fun call to make to your boss. Hey, I'm going to be late. There's an alligator on the causeway.
Versus, say, in Canada, where I'm sorry, there's moose blocking the road. So, yes. Yeah, it's a thing. Yes, yeah.
It is a thing. And I actually know somebody who jumped on a gator just for shits and giggles. Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that.
No, that's how you get a gator stalker. Fun fact.
The gator's like, oh, fuck you, it's round two, motherfucker, mm-hmm. And he follows you?
For years.
That makes sense.
Years. His entire life. Like, there.
Did the alligator make TikTok sounds and was coming for the other person's other hand?
It makes me think of that. Okay. It really does. Because he would follow him around the property, and if he got in the little paddle boat, he would follow him at a distance the boat.
Oh, no.
It was creepy.
You know, again, so happy to be living in a part of the country where very few instances of wildlife that wants to kill me can be found. Yep. I mean, we don't even have snakes, really, that are poisonous out here. Spiders, but not, like, the real bad kind.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not, it's a little too wet for the brown recluse.
I like that.
You know, you can have that. Even hantavirus isn't a hugely easy thing to catch, because, again, wet.
Yeah, we just have parents who don't vaccinate their kids.
Well, right.
Therefore,
so
they're bringing back measles.
The human animal is the one to be most afraid of out here.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, serial killers. Yeah.
Jeff Bezos.
There you go.
Yeah, and anti-vaxxers on Vashon Island.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Well, and on that note.
Stay out of the swamp. And maybe microchip your kid. That's all I'm saying.
Take care of each other.
And don't get bronchitis.
Alrighty, remember what I always like to say. If you're a hater, then don't be a raider. However, if you like what we're doing and want to help us spread the disturbing word, then hit a like, subscribe, and leave a nice review. If you want to contact us, then you can reach us at disturbinginterest@gmail.com, at our website, disturbinginterest.com, or you can send us items for our unboxing videos at P.O. Box 70515, Seattle, Washington, 98127. Find us on Patreon if you're feeling super generous, and remember, you might be disturbed, but you're not alone.